Hello, I'm Graham Smith from PC Gamer, and I'm here today with Chris Thurston.
Hello.
And Tom Francis.
Hello.
And we are going to talk about Dishonored. Now, if you haven't played Dishonored yet, the new first-person game from Bethesda and Arkane.
Graham's making a giant marketing face right now.
Graham suddenly forgets who the developer's name was. Chris mimes it, so I went for the publisher first. But if you haven't already played the game, then stop listening right now, because we will talk about spoilers, possibly right now, in fact. So...
Yep.
Take a little moment and pull your earphones
out. You do not retain your honour in the game.
Your iPhone down the
well,
drain.
Well, I mean, your honour is a kind of flexible concept.
See, we're straight into the spoiler territory.
Yeah,
I hope you're gone.
Let's introduce the game, first of all, properly. So it's a new game from Arkane, designed by Raph Colantonio and Harvey Smith. Harvey Smith, best known for Deus Ex and for Blacksite Area 51, but let's not talk about that, because that's just mean.
He had lots of good ideas.
Raph and Arkane is best known for Dark Messiah of Might and Magic, and before that, Arx Fatalis, which was also very good. It's a... kind of a stealth game, although you don't necessarily have to play it that way. But really, the best points of reference for are stuff like Thief, Deus Ex, System Shock, those kinds of games. Self-contained missions where you can approach them in a range of different ways, with many different routes through the level and different powers you can use and people you have to kill, except that you don't have to kill them. You can also damn them to a horrible life
things,
of
yeah.
slavery. Yeah. And those are considered the nice options for some reason. But we'll get to that. So, Chris, what do you think of Dishonored?
I thought it was great. I have some gripes, but really it's one of those games where the fact that the majority of the experience was so good and like the best stealth game in years, I liked it more than Human Revolution, honestly. Mm. But I mean, also, but that's possibly just because I like Thief more than Deus Ex, so there's going to be a kind of few sides to that, and the way it's structured and the freedom you're given in the levels and the way it changes over time. To focus on the things that I kind of bounced off a little bit, I think it's very easy, Dishonored, to get through the game, especially if you stealth, and even to get the good ending where you don't kill people and you're really nice, because you know stealth is kind of an absolute, right? Difficulty setting does change how perceptive guards are, but if you're teleporting or possessing people or stopping time, there's only so much they can really do to stop you. And I was ghosting the final levels without very much difficulty because I was so powerful by that point. Likewise, it relies kind of... like, right now, for my second playthrough, I've given myself other restrictions, which we can talk about in a bit, but I've switched off all of the UI assists, like the objective markers and things, which does make the game more difficult because it does tend to hold your hand quite a lot. But doing that does mean that you kind of have to have already played it once, because sometimes the objective markers... There's no way you would find the things you need to do. The mandatory second objectives and things in missions without that. A good example of this is in the High Overseer mission, when you've got the option to save the guard captain. If you leave him conscious, then he will save himself, and that's fine. If you knock him out, you have to hide him in a particular bin. And the objective you're given, and if you're just reading the journal for this, is take him to a safe location. The game, there's only one safe location the game will accept.
Yeah.
And if you're playing with objective markers turned off, I can understand that being incredibly frustrating, and that just feels like a bit too heavy-handed in terms of design, and again, it's a tiny nickel, but there you go.
Something I found was cool is that with objective markers off... Sorry, if you turn objective markers on, you can then go into the objective screen and uncheck individual ones. So what I did was I left them on, but I just unchecked them all, and then if I actually got stuck and didn't know what I was doing, I'd go back and check the one I was actually working on and figure out where it was and then turn it off again.
I suppose it's worth saying that it's great that the game lets you do this, that lets you turn off everything.
Yeah.
And
there's tons of UI options as well.
Yeah, I turned off all of the like mana and health stuff and the sneak indicator and just had nothing on the screen when I didn't need it. Mm. And I really like the fact that there's a little noise for when your mana starts to recharge, because when you use a power, there's a short delay, and then the mana you spent, some of it will regenerate. it's great when you're particularly in a... if you're sneaking or something, you just blink to a hiding spot, sitting there with no kind of visual indicator, just waiting for that noise to go... ding. Okay, I can move again.
And my only other gripe, and it feels weird starting on gripes because so much I loved about the game that I really want to go into, but my other gripe actually does come from something I loved about the game, which I really loved the world, and I loved the really evident effort that went into the world. When I saw Dishonored back in February, they said that it'd been the longest pre-production phase that they'd ever seen in their careers on a game, in terms of the amount of research. You know, you see the anatomical research and how well-rendered the faces are and how cool the stylized locations are, and the when they went to London...
the nose is in the right place.
Yeah. Well, they went to London, they went to Edinburgh, they looked at the physiognomy of British people to see kind of how to build their guards, and kind of, they did, and it's really interesting. Like talking, listening to Victor Antonov talk about his art, like the design process for that game is fascinating. And the same obviously happened with the fiction, and you can see the probably layers of different games Dishonored may have been in terms of like how the magic works and how it fits into the world and the importance of the whales and all this stuff. And as the game goes on, you get more hints about how that stuff's linked together, and also the other cities and the empire and how that fits together. Whereas the game itself doesn't use very much of that actually in the end. And I'm torn about whether I prefer that to the, you know, Corvo's just solved the riddle of the universe. Let's tell you everything about how whales are connected to the outsider, are connected to magic, are connected to everything else. Mm-hmm. But in a sense, it felt like there was a lot of, like, I had a lot of questions left over for what is not a tremendously long game. It's a deep game. There's a lot you can do in it, but it's not tremendously long. Definitely not as short as people keep saying.
People keep talking about how you can complete it in six hours.
If you're on easy and you run and you sort of shoot everyone,
really
then
sprint through it, then maybe.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not.
You don't
want
to play the game, just say so.
It's that the scope of the story it tells, while significant to the characters involved, is kind of just one place and one week, basically, in Corvo's life. And, you know, it's kind of, there's a sort of limited scope to it. And in that regard, things like the Outsider, who's the kind of magic floating dude that shows up to give you powers.
Emo blogger, as Tom described him to me, who turns up and asks you whiny questions Corvo. With these stupid French.
Yeah, indeed, like,
how does it feel to be betrayed? Yeah.
I don't you care,
fascinate,
shut up.
You fascinate me, Corvo.
Sneaking
around.
Is that
you
what
ate
you like
50
to do?
Cans of tuna today, Corvo. How did you do that? Why did you do that? How do you eat all the tuna on a shelf almost instantly?
The only cool moment I had with the Outsider was... when I played slightly weirdly on Dishonored, because I really wanted to try out all of the cool lethal gadgets. I wanted to try all the cool options, basically. It gives you loads of cool options, and I wanted to try them all, particularly rewiring everything you can rewire, placing spring mines on things, and stabbing people, doing like leap attacks and loads of really stylish, cool things, killing people. And so I did that, killed loads and loads of guards, and then when I got to the first target to take out... I was interested in what the non-lethal option was, because I pretty much knew how the killing option would go. I figured I'd probably put my knife into his head and then he'll be dead. And so, particularly because I was reviewing it, I wanted to know what all the options were and how compelling they were, like whether the non-lethal options kind of felt good, you know, whether it was a satisfying conclusion.
Some of them do not feel good.
Yeah, in some cases, no. And so the way I ended up playing was I killed all the guards, and then I got to the target, who's like the worst person in the world, and let him live. And then the first time I talked to the Outsider after that, I said, Corvo, I must say I'm surprised by your actions. Yeah, you probably would be.
I remember, like, I asked Harvey Smith when I interviewed him that whether or not the Outsider kind of is the kind of the games designer of Dishonored. You know what I mean? He just kind of randomly comes in, gives this one guy special powers, and just go off and do things. And I think that's a nice way of sort of interpreting him, that kind of... It means that his lack of a role in the plot, really.
A charitable way of interpreting it.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know, charity is
but
warranted
sometimes.
But if
he's the game designer, why does he turn up and say such annoying and stupid things? I understand his role as the game designer at the start of the game, and that he's the MacGuffin, I was
certainly expecting him to play a bigger role in the story, particularly the plague. Yeah. If we're going to talk freely about spoilers, again, second warning if you're still listening. The fact that the plague is kind of brushed under the carpet, but halfway through is we just did the plague, right? And it turns out to be part of the conspiracy. Is a bit like I was, you know, because there's the sort of hints that you get this kind of like it's the end of days thing, and you know, we've been killing these whales that are nice and suffer, and the whales are magic, and the plague is a punishment for that. That was definitely what I thought was happening.
Okay.
Like the plague was a punishment for the whaling industry, because that seems to be the sort of thing that's going on. Like that definitely, all the signs pointed to that, the logs you hear about whaling and stuff like that. When that wasn't the case, it was kind of, oh, then, okay.
It was, like, there is that mission where you, is it the one where you have to kill the Grand Overseer, or, no, the Lord Regent, you're going to kill the Lord Regent, and you can, there's a secondary objective, an optional thing, to go get that audio file of
the
him
confession.
Confessing all of his crimes for no apparent reason.
That's the thing
and
as well.
You can broadcast that over the radio to the entire city and ruin him. And, you know, and that seems to have almost no consequence. Like, that audio file is playing and the guards don't really react. They're still just walking around. They don't know that I'm there because they haven't found the guy's body yet or anything like that. But they're not... running up to the radio tower.
Well,
that is
the non-lethal option.
Well, I'd killed the Lord Regent
because...
and then did the optional thing as well, because it was still a possible thing. But no one reacted to it. And then as the plot progressed after that point, some of the things that happened didn't quite make sense in light of the fact that everyone knew that the Lord Regent had deliberately brought plague rats. Like, there's a betrayal that happens, and it's the main twist for Dishonored, but we said we're going to talk about spoilers, where your friends, the loyalists, who are helping you mount this campaign against the people who killed the Empress, turn on you because they are worried, or Havelock is worried about being held accountable for the things they've done, and he thinks that if he makes you the scapegoat for it all, then he'll be free. But he doesn't need you as a scapegoat, because I've just outed the Lord Regent as being a mastermind villain who introduced plague rats and killed everybody.
One thing that's really interesting is the reason they betray you changes. I never got that. I was told I was told that they betrayed me simply because they were close to power, and there was no, it wasn't anything to do with me. It was just they could get rid of me, and then take power for themselves, because they knew, because I'm so good, right, and I'm so protective of Emily, the princess, that I would never let them do that. So they have to get rid of me.
Well, they mentioned that reason as well, but one of the big things they talk about, or Havelock talks about, perhaps in a diary or something, I can't remember where I read it, is specifically that they're afraid of being held accountable for the terrible things they've done and the people they've killed, essentially.
I remember that.
If they just put it all on your head, they have nothing against you personally, but if they put it all on your head, then they seem like the good guys who caught you. But don't we already seem like the cool good guys? Because this guy is just a plague.
Well, interestingly, I think that might be a thing, because I broadcast the signal, the message, and then walked downstairs and watched the guards arrest the Lord Regent and haul him off.
Okay, wow.
Like, there is a scene that happens, because the guards intercept the Lord Regent as he's running to shut it off. You find him at the bottom of the stairs. Okay. So there is a thing that happens if you do that when he's still alive. Mm. The way I did that is I teleported into his bedroom, choked him out, put him into bed. So choked him out and lay him on his bed, just in case anyone walked in, he's asleep on his bed. And then went and did the thing. Awesome. So he must have woken up. Like, shit! Like, that's my recording where I confessed to, oh God!
Like, why is that playing?
Yeah, running in his nightie.
The wrong tape!
But it just seemed like, you know, the way, because I played that audio tape, then Havelock blaming me for all those crimes would just make me a folk hero. The city would love me. I'm Robin Hood. I killed all the.
Yeah.
I think that's an eventuality it doesn't plan for, I guess.
The non-lethal option that I really didn't like was the Pendleton's one, where you do a whole side quest for Jack Pants, whatever his name is.
Stackjaw. Jack Pants.
He has funny trousers.
Yeah, he does have funny trousers.
And it's leading towards, like, oh, he's going to, you know, come up with a way to get rid of the Pendletons without killing them. And then I finished the side quest and says, yep, so I'll do that. And I'm like, oh, he's just going to do it.
Yeah, I wish
he's
going to
get in there and abduct him himself. Oh, well, that's my mission. I mean, I don't want to kill him, but I'd like, at least my job should be get the bodies out or something. Like,
yeah,
you know, abduct them.
Like, I did that the first time, find it kind of unsatisfying. Probably because I was in the first time I did Golden Cat, I walked in, found the artist almost immediately by accident, interrogated him, got the code, and then went exploring and went upstairs and thought, oh, there's a prostitute in that room, I'm not going in there, opened the other door, and Emily was in there. And I was like, oh, this is good. I never had to do any of the thing where you go to the office to find out where she is, nothing. And just, nope, okay, good, and we're gone. Like, it was sort of. But I just replayed it last night, actually, with my stupid rules, which are no UI, no magic. Hard mode, no quick save. Very hard, even. And that was really satisfying, because actually I'm trying to play it in the sense that, like, okay, Corvo has no magic powers, but will do anything to protect Emily. And in that sense, trusting Slackjaw to do it for you makes no fucking sense.
Yeah.
Like, if it's that important that this happens and the life of this person you care about is at stake, you wouldn't say, yeah, okay, you do it. I'm off. Bye. Like, you would just, like, so I did it with, you know, crossbows. But
So my weird, this wasn't a rule, but every time I met Granny Rags, I killed her. And so I just, like, she didn't even introduce herself. She was just this old woman in a house, and I helped defend her. And
Susan
then
Sarandon.
Once I killed her, defended her house, she was just looking the other way, and I thought, I wonder if I can stab her. And you can. And you kill her, and she turns into a plague of rats. And they started nibbling at me, and I ran away, and I met the art dealer. And the rats that were Granny Rags ate the art dealer. And I'm like, I'd had an objective to talk to this art dealer, but then I talked to him and it like wasn't time or something. He said, come to my shop later. And so whatever else you do with him to do with the Golden Cat never came up for me, because he was dead. He got eaten by rats. And then I mean, I also never got a quest to go against Slackjaw. I didn't know that was a thing.
That is a thing.
And so I went through that whole area of Slackjaw. It was all neutral territory, and I talked to Slackjaw, and I was, did missions for him, and he was my friend. And I also like subtly stole from those guys. Like I broke into their safe and got all the loot from there by lifting keys off the thug's belt, which is really tense because obviously if they caught me, then they're in a room full of hundreds of thugs. And then I was watching Alex Wiltshire play it, and that area was a hostile level for him. He was having to, you know, stalk his way around the whole place, killing all these thugs or avoiding them, sleep-holding them. And of course, it works like that. You know, it's designed to be a good combat level with all these alternate routes and platforms and things.
So if you... Does anyone know, like, if you go in and do that mission for Granny Rags, the poison Slackjaw's elixir, does he then... Are they then enemies to you?
I think they're gone.
Okay, because see, like, Well, I did the poison elixir thing, but I did it stealthily, so I was never seen by any of them.
Oh, really? Because
so
I've just done that, yeah.
In future missions, Slackjaw was still my friend. Like, I still nice. Went back in there, and it was neutral territory, and he was really bummed out because his elixir had been completely poisoned.
Like, did Slackjaw show up when you fight Granny Rags?
At the end?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's in chains. Yeah, and yeah. I have the choice of whether to help Granny Rags cook him or help him escape, and I killed Granny Rags at that point.
I actually choked Granny Rags out and just put us to bed again. She's an old woman. I robbed her of her power. I destroyed the fetish and then choked her out and put her to sleep.
See, I destroyed the thing, and she was pretty mad about that. She was attacking me with rats and stuff.
Yeah,
she brought me around, so I ran over and stabbed her, and then threw her in her own bath of chemicals.
You see, this is the thing as well, because I got a bone charm that massively shortens the amount of time it takes to choke someone out. Like, yeah, it's called something like strong arms, which means it's not instant, but it's like and then done. And that massively changed the way I played the game, because suddenly, like, doing, like, basically I've described it already to you guys, I think, as teleporting cuddle monster, that I could, like, neutralize with between stop time, blink, and that, neutralize whole rooms of people whose only memory of the encounter would be of being held, like, briefly, and then sleep. And then they'd wake up a few hours later, someone important would be dead, but everyone would have had the same experience, which is like, did you feel like someone cuddled you and then you were asleep? Yes.
There's a whole episode of Adventure Time about this.
But how do you, like? I mean, how did you guys feel about the twist, the betrayal in general?
It's the WNATCO.
I disliked it quite strongly, not because it was predictable, because they always are, but because it was punishing me and rubbing my face in me having made a mistake, which was to trust these people. I never made that mistake. I didn't trust those people. Of course I didn't. They're all assholes. You know they're assholes. And the annoying thing is that you get the choice between, do you want to kill the targets you're sent to kill, or do you want to abduct them and take them into a life of eternal torment, or in one case, like what sounds like very nasty fate with the Lady Boyles thing. The actual choice you'd have in that situation is, do you want to kill the people they say you have to die, or do you want to not do that? Do you want to just not kill that person because you don't agree they need to die? Or do you want to do it for your own reasons and not work for these people and not use their help or whatever? And then what I was punished for was, you know, it doesn't matter whether you did the non-lethal approach or the killing approach, you are punished for trusting these people and doing their dirty work. And it kind of, when they're talking about, oh, do you think you get away with all these terrible things you've done? Like, no, I thought it was a video game.
BioShock thing of like BioShock kind of gets away with it a little bit because the story is that you're, well, I'm going to spoil BioShock now for people who haven't played that, but the story is that you've been brainwashed and they're controlling you with that, would you kindly phrase, which sort of makes sense. But at the same time, it's like my only option to go against these people when was to quit the game. It's like, you know, I wasn't brainwashed really, and I wasn't foolish or used or a pawn. I was just playing the video game that you sold to me.
I think sometimes something that the game does do very well, I mean, the problem of like agency and player motivation in games is way bigger than Dishonored, right?
Yeah.
Like, and it's way bigger than BioShock, which attempted to address it and had its own problems. I think the thing Dishonored does do very well, and I guess like we've talked about this a million times, but the way I play games, where I kind of really imaginatively invest in characters, and I really love like implicit relationships and like the histories and things. The things I loved about its early storytelling, and I do think it actually does a very good job of giving you enough information to care about Corvo, who Corvo is, and who his relationship, what his relationship is with the Empress, and what the relationship is with Emily. Gives you enough information to get a sense of what that might be, but doesn't actually ram it down your throat at all. Like, you get to choose who Corvo was and how he became Lord Protector, Lord Protector, Forgotten.
Something like that.
Lord Protector. Let's say Lord Protector. Lord Protector from his, like, foreigner origins. And there's a story there. Like, there's totally, like, a, probably, you know, if this was a series of books, that's book one, right? Is how Corvo becomes the role. Was he an assassin? Was he an amazing assassin? Was he an amazing brawler? Was he just this good guy? Like, you know what I mean? What the fact that it gives you that freedom to invest, I think, is really, really successful. And I loved the bit at the start. Like, it got me at the start when you see Emily for the first time and she runs directly into his arms and then, like, kisses his hand or something, kisses his cheek or something. And
you
it's like,
hug her.
Yeah, yeah, and you hug her. And it's like, okay.
And she wants to play hide and seek.
Yeah, she wants to play hide and seek. And like, you've completely established and given me some control over establishing this character. And that works really successfully as a kind of, I mean, all I think all good game protagonists are a double act between the player and the developer. And Corvo, I think, is a good example of that because, like, whether or not you choose to go and play with Emily, obviously there's a game thing there, and the player in you might be thinking, I want to do this because I don't want to miss content. But but also, like, if he is the kind of guy that would come back with bad news about the plague but then run off to play with this little 10-year-old girl who may or may not be his daughter, you can totally decide as well because the relationship with the Empress is so questionable. Like, in terms of what that relationship is, and the fact that, I mean, this is the another
it
thing.
It felt fairly explicit to me that she was my daughter. Like, it never comes out and says that directly, but there are journals saying, is Emily really your daughter? And there are, and then the ending as well that I got, which was fairly explicit of, because you were more to him, more to Emily than just Lord Protector, was the line.
She's the moral. But the thing is, it never says it. And I think that's really important because
she
that story
does bury you in her mother's tomb, which is kind of like, if you're her dead mother and Corvo is just your bodyguard, then you're like,
no, but like,
you put him down here with me for?
But I mean, there's the surrogate father thing as well. Like, there are basically, what I'm saying is, maybe this is going too deep into this one aspect of the story, but no, I think this is really interesting from a writing point of view because there are a dozen possible stories there, all of which make sense within the context of the events of the game. So you could have the story where Emily isn't Corvo's daughter, but he is in love with the Empress or whatever, and that these things are related, and then it's the surrogate father thing, right? Those stories work as well, and that's really interesting, and I think that's a really successful way of telling a story within the context of this kind of game.
Did you see the comments Austin Grossman made? We posted them on PC Gamer.
Silent protagonist.
Yeah, about how he thinks Corvo is a better silent protagonist than Gordon Freeman is, because he thinks that Gordon Freeman is creepy as hell. That Gordon just is this strange man who watches, essentially, whereas you can embody Corvo in a greater degree because they've given him a backstory and helped you out a little bit in that introduction so that you feel more involved. You've got an emotional connection rather than just being, I'm a scientist that worked with your dad and now I'm going to follow you around and never say anything.
This is the thing, I hate backstory. I think backstory is the least effective way of building a connection.
I hate lore.
I don't mind, that's what I would say. Backstory. But I think they did a really great job of not giving you too much backstory in Dishonored, that you got just enough to know what your position is.
Yeah, and the rest of it is optional. It's in books and stuff like that.
It just fleshes things around. Like, there's an interesting, did you read Dowd, who's the assassin? He's the has similar powers to you, who kills the Empress. And when you do track him down in his office, there is a book that's quite well hidden that explains his thoughts on Corvo, because they're from the same country.
Okay.
And he says that it's his regret. It's the reason I didn't kill him, actually, when I played it, because I was going to kill him, and I ended up just humiliating him.
You were reading a book. But the book
is his...
Hold on. There's something in here that's actually giving me a lot of sympathy.
But he really regrets killing the Empress. And he says, looking at Corvo and seeing his countrymen and seeing someone who's like him in a lot of ways, and the fact that what his like thing has brought him down to, and that was kind of really interesting and sort of like, again, doesn't tell you too much about Corvo, but just sort of fills in this kind of extra layer, and you know, that's I think really successful. And it's amazing that we've gotten this far in talking about Dishonored without talking about wacky things that we've done to people. But they made me care, and I did care then. And
see, the twist for
it
me
didn't really.
Sorry, I was going to say that what started this bit of the conversation was me asking what you guys thought of the twist, and it annoyed me because it was predictable. Like, that was the thing that bothered me about it, was that the second I met this people in the pub and I thought, you guys are going to betray me later, aren't you?
Yeah,
and that would have been the first thing I would have said in real life.
like the heart basically tells you they're going to do it as well. The heart being an interesting mechanic.
The heart's really great. Yeah,
it's also voice of the Empress.
Yeah, mechanical magical heart that you can use to click on people and get little bits of secrets about them, which I didn't start using until about 8 hours into the game or something like that, when I suddenly remembered, weird heart thing in my pocket.
There was a brilliant moment for me of like intersection of things that I'd done independently, where I clicked on Piero really, really quickly early in the game, and one of the things it tells you is, he spies on Callista when she's bathing. And then later in the game, well, I was looking for him, because later in the game, Emily says, oh, Callista's having a bath. I was like, fuck, where's Piero? And I went to find him, and he was doing it. And that was so awesome, because it was like,
these things together.
Yeah,
See, I just stumbled across him. I was just walking down a corridor, and he was there.
I will tell you that right at the start.
Did either of you accidentally walk in on Callista?
Yes, I did.
Well, you say accidentally. After Piero was gone, I opened the door to see what happened.
Yeah, I shouted at Piero and then immediately looked through the keyhole to see what he would do.
I wandered off and then I came back and I didn't know where I was going, and I opened that door by accident. And I had this weird thing where I opened the door and I just instinctively gasped and then shut it again. I don't think I've ever done that in a game before. I actually felt like
if you go in, then the dialogue option you get.
No.
You can basically say, want some company? Oh, and to which Callista responds, we're all under a lot of pressure, Corvo. Do something else.
Excellent.
It's like, yeah, go away.
It's actually one of my pet hates in games that if you're the dashing protagonist character, every time you're able to make any kind of advance on a woman, they'll always hint that they're attracted to you and that they would go for it. I hate that so much.
I mean, Callista says that, you know, under other circumstances, maybe, but right now is fucking awful timing, so go away.
There is... I've completely forgotten what I was going to say. Someone else should talk.
Okay. What I was going to say, when you're talking about Corvo and the kind of... Chris was saying how effective it was for him in terms of like getting him immersed in the character. None of it really worked for me. I have no feelings toward Corvo whatsoever. I didn't think I was playing a role at all. I was always just playing myself. He could have been Gordon Freeman for me. If there was no lines of dialogue for Corvo, I think I would have certainly wouldn't have liked it any less. And it was just because I didn't... The trouble is, I really like the intro visually, and it has a great atmosphere to it, but I don't really believe in Emily that much, and I really, really dislike the Empress. The second she opens her mouth, it's like, oh, it is a fair wind that brings you to me, Corvo. It's just like, oh, she's from a completely different fiction. She talks unlike anything else. I didn't think the acting was very good. And so I just didn't believe in her at all. Didn't care when she died. Didn't care about my place in that. And from then on, I was just, I'm an assassin. I'm going to go kill some people. And the Outsider felt to me like part of that as well. He speaks in, you know, traditional fantasy speak of, know this, how you use the powers will be up to you, but I will be watching with interest. Well, what does any of that mean? I don't care. Shut up.
My favorite thing about doing this no magic playthrough is that animation that I really like when you wake up after the dream and Corvo looks at the back of his hand, and you see it in the first person, you look at the back of the hand and the kind of little start of surprise, which is a nice little touch just to kind of like, oh, fuck, it was real. Is that was the last Corvo thought about that dream. He never even bothered to try to see if it would work in real life. Just doesn't bother.
Goes playing about... a Corvo who actually does have magical powers, he just hasn't realised it.
Basically, he's just never tried. Like, if you had a dream where you could teleport, you wouldn't necessarily go out in real life, clench your fist and just try and teleport. He's got things to do. Like, no, he doesn't think about it.
There's some people to kill. That must be great for the Outsider.
I haven't seen it again
Corvo,
yet. Also, I'm not looking for runes. Why would I? I'm not looking for runes, so I haven't found the Outsider shrines yet, but I really want a moment where he's like, Corvo, seriously.
I wasn't going to say this explicitly, but you have magical powers. You can be using
them. And I don't want to use them.
Well, the best bit for me with the mechanical heart was I used it on one of the servants in the Hound's Pit pub, and it said, if she survives tomorrow, she'll be torn apart by rabid hounds. It was like, oh, okay. Well, obviously then... Like every mission, you keep going to bed and waking up and it's a new day. And so it's like, okay, well, maybe I'm going to see that character get torn apart by rabid hounds then. But no, that was then the betrayal happens the next day. So she gets shot with everyone else. But that must be a line. That line only works if you use the mechanical heart on that person on that day. And that character doesn't even have a name. Like, I don't know. Like, or if she does, Lydia. I don't know who it was.
I think it's Lydia.
It might have been Lydia.
I'm trying to work out if the... number of people who die in the betrayal varies at all?
I think Callista may or may not die based on Kerno, if you save her uncle.
Ah, okay.
Because there's a reference to that. It says Havelock spared her because he owed her uncle a debt, whereas obviously if her uncle was dead, he would owe no debt.
Oh, that's an interesting point. Yeah. Yeah, that's something I'll have to try, actually.
But yeah, so that's potentially...
Well, so did you guys... So after the betrayal, when you return back to the Hound's Pit pub, you have a choice over whether or not to rescue or to try to rescue Piero and...
Calvin.
Is it?
Sokolov?
Sokolov, yes, yeah. That's it. Piero and Sokolov. Did you guys both save them?
I saved them.
I didn't know that was optional. Yeah, I did that.
Yeah, I did that as well.
Did you listen to the conversation they're having under the table?
Yeah,
that's good.
That was so good.
See, but there's like, if you don't save them, presumably, because the ending I got was the super happy fun ending from, you know, Wayne's World.
What a fun time we had!
Amazing, the plague, and they work out a cure for the plague. Yeah. But obviously, if you didn't save them, even if you were nice through the whole rest of the game and you didn't save those two guys, then presumably there is no cure for the plague.
Well, maybe it's just they get out on their own. And
well, I think also I think a lot of those sequences at the end are compartmentalized, so you don't necessarily have all of them. Like you can just cut that. You know, yeah. I mean? Like there's a
they maybe just don't mention it. That there's
yeah. I mean, I got the bad ending, and they don't cure a damn thing. It doesn't come up. They just
you said that everyone tears themselves apart forever.
Yeah, like the diorama it shows is just people like punching each other and like tearing each other down and stabbing each other, and Emily's on the throne, but she's kind of like
what does she get
state
a nickname?
Of disarray.
Emily the something.
Yes. Oh no, wait. Does she?
So I'm wondering if that changed because it's Emily the Wise.
That's who it was for me. Yeah, with and me at our side.
Might I don't remember what it was. But it was like the
Emily
line
the
is,
Emily the fucking horrible.
The line is like, "Will Emily's rise to power be seen as like on the on a pile of corpses or something?"
Because okay. Like you get the same. What I'm imagining is the same shot of like going through the main hall with a good ending, but everyone's really happy and they're holding glasses aloft.
Yeah, there's a bit of like Corvo. Like,
hands in each other's corner.
So you know the
and it lands on the throne and Emily's there and you're at her side.
You know the shot that's the opener in our review, 2-page 1 of the tall boy shooting someone with a fiery arrow. That's from the ending scene I got. It's not a spoiler, but it does come from the very end of the game. And there's loads of scenes like that. There's one, yeah. So there's tall boy like incinerating people in the most like evocative and beautifully composed way that they ever have. And then people being torn about rats and stuff, and basically the whole country's gone to chaos. The funny thing about it is that I don't know if this is me getting what I deserve, or but from my perspective, one of the reasons that the twist was annoying to me was that I never thought it was a good idea to put Emily in power. She's a 10-year-old girl. Of course she's going to be influenced by bad people. It's a stupid idea. A terrible system of government. I don't want that to happen. And yeah, that's the motivation for doing all the things that you're doing. It's like, we are the pact who are going to put Emily back on, put Emily on the throne. And then, of course, when Emily was on the throne, she did a terrible job and the world was torn apart. I'm like, well, yeah, I told you this was going to happen.
I think within the context of the fiction, though, given who Corvo is and the position he holds, that route to power, like putting Emily on the throne, trying to restore some sense of normalcy makes sense within the context of what it's not going to like, okay, guys, a terrible thing has happened, but this is a great opportunity for democracy, says Corvo on his own in the pub before going to kill everyone. Like, yeah, I think the betrayal for me, the reason I kind of, like, I figured it was coming, obviously, because you've been listening to the heart and everything else. Mm-hmm. And I figured, obviously, Corvo would know it was coming. But I think if you play that his motivation is basically solely like, where is Emily safest at a given time? He's kind of caught between a rock and a hard place, and it kind of helped made it work better for me in a sense.
Maybe, but then you've done all the missions you have to do, and they hand you a drink. And it's like, at that point, like, okay, well, this is the first time in this video game which I've been holding a glass in my actual hand rather than it floating in front of me a foot and a half.
Oh, yeah, during my pint holding mind pass. Yeah,
and so I mean, it's like, well, I know what's in this glass. It's not liquid. It's not beverage that's going to quench my thirst. Like,
maybe I'm an idiot. I didn't see that coming. When you start to have the little visions before you pass out, I thought that was totally outside of stuff. I thought there might be some kind of, obviously.
You thought the outsider might be relevant to the plot anyway.
Yeah. what I figured would be that the people in the pub at the start would become your second half targets. I was surprised actually that they kind of put them all in one go rather than actually it being like Pendleton then. Yeah. Martin, then, you know, whatever. Even if they reused environments or something.
There was.
But I thought that this was going to be the point where, like, the outsider collects on his debt or something. Like, that's what I thought was going to happen, but it didn't.
There was quite a cool little cinematic thing that happens in that scene, I think, just before you drink. I remember before I knew that this was the moment they were going to betray me, inevitably, there was just the audio was very weird. Like, everyone was kind of talking at once, and it was kind of like really discordant and slightly irritating. And I remember thinking, oh, this is badly kind of mixed or badly, you know, scripted. And like the voices in the background are too loud, and you can't really hear what people are saying in the foreground, and it becomes a bit chaotic. And then it's after you've drunk, but it's kind of before anyone's revealed anything bad's going to happen, and before your vision goes weird. And then your vision goes weird, and you start to realize that was like part of the effect of the poison.
Mm. I think it's well really presented. Cool. I mean, maybe we're dwelling on too much on this one point, but
I mean, it is like, a major pivot point for the game, because the pace of the game changes after that point as well.
The
like,
mission
structurally,
that
it changes.
It, like the Flooded District and going after Dowd and that stuff, I actually really liked.
I really liked it as well, but it's very different from the, you know, up until that point, you've had kind of almost self contained missions with a specific target, and you spend 2 to 3 hours, if you want to, in this one area going to do a job. And then after that point, you just, it becomes more like a.
Get to the sewer,
like,
get to the
actually,
next bit.
Yes, yeah. That Flooded District level does feel like a Half-Life level in layout.
And there is a moment as well where you don't actually have an objective. Like, your objective is escape from this area, and you escape, and the game doesn't give you an objective for a little while. You just have to walk for a couple of minutes because you've nothing else to do, and then, you know, you get an objective to escape the next area, but it doesn't tell you that. It's just I'm lost in the cracks at that point, and that was slightly strange.
I think that the Flooded District, I really liked, because it was such a visual break for it, and it was just kind of like you're off balance, you know, something bad has happened, and now you're in this place where you don't have your tools, you're kind of, which is a bit of a cheat joke, but you're not doing your normal job, and so everything's weird, including the colour scheme. And so it kind of all hung together nicely for that. I would have liked it if right after that, your next job was a proper conventional assassination with a big building to kind of explore however you like, but it's not. It's the plague district and the kind of all those bodies, and getting through that as another linear kind of leg. And it never really gets back to its old kind of golden cat mission.
I don't know if it was a time thing. It feels like almost that and going after Dowd should have been separate things. Like, you escape from the Plague District, and then you go after Dowd, who is in his own little fortress thing, maybe within that environment, but then it's a more traditional mission where you can sort of set it up.
Did you do the thing of, like, they take all your equipment away, the Dowd is at, and his assassins? Did you go do the thing of going to get your equipment cash?
I did.
Yeah, I did as well. Because that's optional, because you can just advance past that point.
I saw his option, I was like, not really. All my stuff.
A foldy sword.
I went and got all my stuff, and then you go into the next area, and there's just guns and swords everywhere, because the game doesn't know whether you went and got your stuff or not. So it's just littered with the stuff I couldn't pick up.
That happens
That felt a little bit crappy, because I went to a lot of effort to go and get my stuff.
But
and
then you wouldn't have a crossbow for the rest of the game if you didn't do that. That's, you know.
Yeah,
I think so, anyway.
I mean, I was assuming that there was, you know, you would find a crossbow at some point.
Don't
it would
the,
just
load
you back up
crossbows?
Again.
Yeah, but it's not your crossbow, but the cool spinny reloading.
That's true. It was strange that after the twist, you couldn't upgrade your equipment anymore, because Piero wasn't around.
At the end, though, you can buy stuff from.
Yeah, at the very end, but there's a long period there of three missions.
So Alex is, he didn't have the fast choking rune, and so his main tool was the sleeper darts, and he only had like 10. And then Piero just kind of never showed up for the next kind of three missions, so he was kind of boned for that.
Yeah, I mean, I like it when games force me to change my playstyle. I know people play these games like, I'm going to be non-lethal, and they get pissed off if the game forces you to change. Not forcing, but like, I felt completely comfortable killing those assassins. Like, within the morality I had established for how I was playing, like, I don't know. Those guys couldn't fuck off and die. Like, there's like killing street guards who don't know any better. That's an asshole thing to do. But those guys, it felt good actually to be able to sword fight, because I didn't actually really sword fight for anyone in the game. And then sword fight blinking opponents and stuff felt like a cool action game then. That was kind of.
Yeah, like stuff like that as well.
Did you attack Dowd?
Yes, I killed Dowd.
But did you get the duel in time and space thing?
Yes.
That's cool. I like that.
Would you
fight the duel?
Yeah, when he freezes time. Yeah, at one point he was doing that when I was trying to get away from him, and it was just really awkward, because I'd be like across the level, and it would go into like grey vision. And
now for the duel only we two can fight! Come back for the duel only we two can fight!
I hate to be the negative voice again, but actually I really disliked the fight with Dowd, because one of the things I'd enjoyed until then, in fact I complimented it the game for this in my review, is that... it never has any annoying boss fights. It kind of does have a quite annoying boss fight. That wasn't
but the,
for
the
me.
It
really
doesn't betray any of the rules of the game, other than the time.
Well,
stuff.
It does. If you possess him, it doesn't work. And there's I can't. Oh, if you're trying to do like a melee takedown, it doesn't work.
I totally just countered and instant killed him.
Right, but like a sneak attack doesn't work.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I can buy having a character who's immune to magic. That's okay for me. Like, I think, you know, and like having the organ grinders that make you.
Yeah, well, that's cool because it's a system, and you know, yeah. That's, I'm told what the rules are. And
but I mean, it's not like the game. It's not like it's a surprise that Dowd has magic powers.
No, but it's just annoying when like I tried one thing, didn't work. Okay, try possession. No, that doesn't work. And so it's like, okay, I've just got to spend some time like asking you what I'm allowed to use in this situation.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I guess I didn't try because I was trying to pickpocket him. So, and then
I mean, actually, if the backstabber worked, I wouldn't have had a complaint with anything else. Like if sneaking up on someone and stabbing them in the neck kills them, then I'm happy.
Yeah, the backstab is the only thing that doesn't make any sense, really, in inverted commas, but within the context of the fiction.
What do you want to talk explicitly about the ending? Both, not just the cutscene, but the lighthouse bit beforehand.
Yeah.
So my setup for it was when I arrived. Havelock was monologuing
by himself
to the dead bodies of Martin and Pendleton, and there was a bunch. I kind of went off and explored at that point and went, oh, well, what's this big tower thing for above this room? There's no one up here and nothing to do. That's weird. And then went back down and confronted Havelock, and he just said, well, do you think I was going to fight you? Here's the key for Emily's room. Kill me or lock me up, I don't care. And then I picked up the key and he freaked out and he went, what? Ring! And like the symbol appeared above his head to say that he was alerted, and then he fought me. And then I was like, oh, okay.
So Captain Irrational.
So I shot him with a tranquilizer dart and went and rescued Emily. And that was the end of the
Havelock the Dangerous. That's an old English literature pun for Havelock. If anyone got that, never mind. We'll be friends. I walked into the room and he was monologuing and the poisoned bodies of Pendleton and Martin, and he was midway through saying something like, will there be justice for men like us, when I killed him from behind and just put him to sleep, never confronted him, just like, nope, where's Emily? And the fact that it ends immediately after you find Emily kind of caught me by surprise a little bit. I was expecting kind of the rest of that mission.
It shows you like a score screen, doesn't it? It tells you who your kills and stuff.
And it was like, yay! And then you win at games.
It was a little bit glitchy for me as well, because I didn't kill Havelock, I just knocked him unconscious. The kind of really tense violin music was still playing. And so you kind of get Emily out and it's got this little ba-da-ba, and that was playing over the top of the it's like a really tense hug.
There's an orchestra upstairs that are really watching through the skylight, really confused about what
is this good or bad? So people are dead.
My ending was quite different. It was I'd killed a lot of people. That last mission is like in the middle of a storm.
Yeah,
if you've killed lots of people, like rain lashing down and stuff, and quite atmospheric. And then I got to kind of the first leg of the island infiltration. Once you get inside the main compound, the overseer guy, what's his name?
Martin,
Emperor from Oblivion, is arguing with Pendleton. Pendleton's up in a bunker and they're having like a standoff. They've been fighting with, like, I guess they've got some guards on each of their sides. And Pendleton is wounded up there from that fight, I think. And I just saw Martin and shot him in the head. mid-conversation, shot his head off with a crossbow. Then I got up to Pendleton and I was going to kill him, but he just died of his wounds anyway. And then when I got up to... I carried on up the tower, and as I was climbing up, I could see like a high ledge way above me, and I could see that Admiral Havelock was on there with Emily, like struggling with her, and so I shot his head off too. I just like looked down my zoomy eye and aim my normal crossbow, which had upgraded to be long range and not have any fall off and stuff, and like it was risky because it was right next to Emily, and I wasn't sure what would happen if I hit her, and yeah, just managed to pull it off and hit him in the head, took his head off clean off, skewering it. And then Emily slips and falls and is hanging onto the ledge, and I ran all the way up the tower and rescued her. But if you take too long, she actually falls off.
Wow.
So that's what
was very different to what me and Graham had.
It was very different, but also it was quite cool because I killed a lot of people in general, and at some point I stopped doing the non-lethal option. I would find out what the non-lethal option was and kill the person anyway. So the last like two or three targets I killed. And so by that stage, I was just the guy who was not going to listen to anyone's shit and was just going to kill them the second I saw them. And it's always irritating in films and stuff where the master assassin finally meets the master general or the master other assassin and has a conversation with him instead of just fucking killing him. Like, a master assassin would just, the first time you have the shot, take the fucking shot.
Yeah.
And so I took the shot.
I did like that, you know, Havelock, for us, you and me, Chris, did just surrender. Like, there was... There was
in theory.
In theory. For me, I don't know if that was...
Don't touch my keys! Because one thing I can't stand.
That's my keys.
That's my car keys, damn it!
Because that seemed kind of like a bug, because I did it again, and he didn't do that the next time. If I let him finish talking and then took the keys, then he was completely cool with that. So that was weird. But I like you didn't want there to be any boss fights, and there wasn't. You know, yeah. I met the kind of arch villain at the end, and he just went, "Fuck this."
Yeah, it didn't like turn out the lighthouse thing was like a fucking robot suit that you then had to fight. You know, that's the video game ending for Dishonored, yeah. Right? Where it's kind of like
he's cloned himself.
You see him, he vanishes behind a glass wall that you inexplicably can't get through, even though you've broken every piece of glass in the game so far. At which point he goes up in a lift with Emily and is like, "Now, Corvo."
Three phase boss fight in the glowing weak spot. The glowing weak spot on the lighthouse is easy to find. It's the bulb.
And then, yeah, you press...
Pierre was constructed on my steampunk suit, so that you have to shoot the flaps off the legs before you can shoot.
And then you get knocked down like a shaft or something. You're lying at the bottom of the shaft where you'll see a character from earlier in the game, maybe Callista, maybe Kerner, maybe Pierre, who will throw you the gravity gun. But now it's more powerful. And then you have to throw giant glowing balls at Havelock's massive robot lighthouse. Thank God that didn't happen.
I thought it was a pretty good ending as far as game endings go. I was quite satisfied with how it wrapped things up.
Yeah,
it was a little bit annoying for me because that whole mission is one big kind of like, you did this game wrong, you did it wrong, here's the bad ending, you fucked it up, everything went to shit, even though some of this wasn't under your control and doesn't really relate to the things you did. And yeah. Samuel like gives you a really hard time and even says, like, get out of my boat.
Like, does he?
See, like, you, man. You try and do those fucking missions without killing anyone.
Like he talks for ages for me.
Yeah. What do you know about
this? I respect you, you're really great. I hope we get to have a drink together later.
I don't like you, you just roam me places.
And it's like, I kept dying and going back to the start of that mission, and after like the third time of listening to his speech politely, because I liked Samuel, he was like one of only two characters in the game I actually like. I just started like teleporting away, and he just stops mid sentence and just rides off.
I was trying to do something else because there's massive, great big, like mooring cables, like support cables for the lighthouse, and one of them hits a rock near where you land. And I figure if I can get onto that rock, I can just run up the cable like the rest of the way. And the game doesn't want you to do this. It's one of the rocks you can't climb.
Yeah.
But I was, the third or fourth time I listened to Samuel's speech, I was either swimming away or desperately trying to climb the rock. And he was looking at me with his head kind of twisted around.
I really respect you, Corvo.
Corvo.
Really like the way you do things.
And there's a line, the other line, like, you watched and listened when other men were afraid. And he's like, splash.
I can make it on this rock dance.
You see, the thing I tried was that you listen to Samuel's speech and then he rides off in his boat. And I saw once he'd ridden off, I blinked onto the back of his boat. Just like rolls his boat out. I'm still here.
Alternative ending unlocked.
It just kind of goes off behind some rocks and then hits an invisible wall that shoves you off the back of the boat into the sea and it sails off.
Awesome.
That's brilliant.
All right, let's talk about, I guess we have to wrap up fairly shortly, but given.
It depends how much you like your personal time, because yeah, we're past the end of work.
No, that's okay, cool. Anyway, one thing we haven't really talked about is like solutions to problems or the thing the game does, you know, phenomenally well, and having replayed High Over the Same Mission now so 5 or 6 times with lots of different ways and doing some stuff for work and just personally, I really love watching like the systems that really sell that game to me. I think the things that elevate it from an excellent game in that genre to among the best is the randomization of how things can happen. Like the fact that the Pendleton brothers will be in random rooms in the brothel.
Yeah,
They're not always in the same place. That makes a huge deal, and that actually changes. I don't know when the trigger for that is, but it's quite late. Like, it's like when the first time you actually physically enter the. It's not when you load the mission, right? Because I've loaded saves where I was outside the Golden Cat and gone in, and they've moved.
Okay,
like
so, where were they for you? Because I didn't even realize that they could be in different places.
Well, they can be in one of four, any two of four places.
There's lots of named rooms in that place, isn't there? There's
silver room, the smoking room, the gold room, and the steam room. And for me, the tournament when I did last night, successfully, they were in the gold room and the silver room, which are actually kind of above each other. So I like snuck outside whichever one was in the upper room first.
It's the gold room.
Yeah, the gold room. And he was, and then watched the conversation play out and waited till he was facing away from his prostitute. Shot the prostitute with the tranquilizer dart, so that he wouldn't respond, because obviously he doesn't see that happen, mm-hmm. then immediately reloaded a proper dart and shot him in the neck. Right. And then that's a way of eliminating both of them silently without raising an alarm outside.
Mm-hmm.
Then crawled around the outside of the building. This is, again, the no magic playthrough. Outside the building, dropped down to the balcony below, got into his brother's room. And in that time, the prostitute did see me. So I just executed the other penalty, then choked out the prostitute, and then got caught by a guard acting like a peeping Tom.
I saw that guard
going up and doing looking at the keyhole,
yeah,
and open the door, and then I didn't get caught, but then that raised the alarm. But I was really lucky that it was the second kill that raised the alarm, and that whole thing kind of emerged completely from the way those targets were arranged and all the different systems that can and can't happen.
On that topic, just briefly, one of the most terrifying moments in the game for me was I was coming out of the kennels in the Overseer mission, and I was about to enter the main compound and was peering through a keyhole of a door. And I couldn't tell what I was seeing at first, and I realised it was the eye of an overseer's mask looking back at me. And then the overseer got out, like, what the fuck? Jesus Christ. I guess they can see through those.
Like, I had a thing where, I think the one time I was getting some footage today, and I was trying to game a particular stealth encounter, but I had a quick save, and I was trying to do it perfectly. And it was a guard facing a wall of light. And then I knew that I'd seen him do this a few times, that he would go off to have a piss. And I figured I'll just go and choke him out.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second time I loaded it, and every subsequent time I loaded it, he refused to do anything else other than go in the other direction, have a smoke, facing a bunch of other guys. And it's like, that's awesome that it's that variable. Like, that makes a huge difference to me. Like, trying to even... It actually solves the problem I have with these games, which is quick saving. Like, I banned myself from quick saving before I even played it, but it's only now that I notice that quick saving isn't as useful in Dishonored as it is in other games, because guards aren't as predictable, and that's really, really awesome.
Yeah, I love stuff like the way they kind of... They tend not to fall for the same trick like a bunch in a row. So that often, if you wait and ambush a bunch, then one of them will hang back and start throwing stones at you and stuff. I had that. That was my first experiences previewing it. Was I set up an ambush for a guard, killed one that way, and then waited for the next one, and just a rock came through the doorway. Like, what? You're not supposed to figure things out. And obviously, with the rewired walls of light, they fall for it just enough. Like, it's enough that it's not. I hate it in a game where they give you a cool thing to do and then they make the AI so smart then it falls for it.
Yeah.
But the first time I rewired a wall of light in my review playthrough, there were loads of guards the other side. I'd, you know, set off a major alarm. Everyone was coming for me. And there were three right in front of me. Two of them just ran straight at me and were incinerated. And the third one was kind of like in the process of running towards me and then just stopped. It's like, okay, and started throwing stones at me. I thought he was trying to deplete the charge, which would have been amazing. But it turns out that rocks don't deplete the charge.
Okay.
But incinerating humans does, so if enough people run into it, you do run out of battery. But yeah, him just throwing rocks kind of looked really cool. Seemed like a thing someone might do, just check the field is still doing that. And then two more guards came from another part of the level and ran straight past him and straight into the wall again. I just loved imagining that guy being like, no! Oh, come on! Hang back a second!
See, in those situations, I liked it because I could blink behind the guards on the other side and then wind blast them through it.
Yeah.
That's the way I was doing it.
So that last guy, the cautious guy, I blinked behind him and backstabbed him, which felt really, really cool, but also deeply unfair for the guards. Like, the only smart guy gets backstabbed.
There is, and you touched on this in your review a little bit, I think, but there is something strangely schizophrenic about the game in that if you kill everyone and use all the tools it gives you... then it punishes you for it at the end. You know, it gives you this really big speech and condemnation and everything is horrible. But as far as playing it stealthily or taking out people non-violently, there aren't that many options. You've got tranquilizer darts and you've got choking people. And that's it. And like dropping on people's heads, you can stab them. There is no... non-violent equivalent of that.
You can just land on them and they're floored, but then they get back up and you can't choke them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's like, if you want to use any of the cool stuff it gives you, you got to kill people. And so, which is why I went from early on doing no-kill missions to, but I want to try the wall of light. So I wind blast people into it.
I had a moment, actually, I still following my own compass a little bit, and I had a moment where I couldn't get through a particular bit without using magic, without rewiring a wall of light, because even disconnecting it brought too much guard attention. It's actually first mission, it's trying to get through the second wall of light on the way to the High Overseer.
Okay.
No, on the way to the Golden Cat, because there's also a watchtower outside it then.
Mm-hmm.
So, basically, if you disconnect it, guards come running, you have to fight them at that point. Like, you're only trapped in a small room, and you've got no magic. So rewiring it, and but all the guard routes, none of them take them through the Wall of Light. So rewiring it was kind of harmless. It allowed me to go through, but no guards have a path that goes through it. So I knew doing it that someone is going to figure this out the hard way eventually. But morally,
is that a no-kill thing?
This will result in fewer deaths than the other thing. And then I remember leaving, leaving the like the mission after you rescue Emily and you come out and you go back out into the alleyways. Leaving that, coming out, and then you come out like under the bridge where that Wall of Light is. And just hearing in this distance this pssst, and then ah, and like, and I was like, okay, and then hearing this like, find him, and I was like, okay, fine, run. Like, it was like, but that was a really nice moment because it was like that thing did have it, initially it felt like I'd gamed it because it just like it didn't fit any of the guard patterns, but obviously something changes when you leave that mission, and some poor guy just like
closure,
yeah. But it, and then it was like, yeah, okay, awesome, that's kind of cool, and that kind something of fits the story of like, how that mission played out then.
I really wanted to try, you know, the first time you see a Wall of Light, there's guards either side of it, and they're joking about it, and they're going to toss a rat through, and then he does. Well, I really want to try unplugging it just before it goes, so the rat just hits the other guy, and it's like, what, man?
Oh, man. I probably tell the story, but my favourite thing, the moment I realised that this game is at its best when you are messing around was, I told you that the Boyle mission in the party bugged for me, so I couldn't. I went upstairs, I subdued every single guard upstairs, silently without any of them seeing or ever finding any of the bodies. And the reason I wanted to do this is I wanted to make upstairs into a kind of like safe area, then talk the target into following me upstairs, then dispose of her, because I'm not going to do the fucking horrible thing it gives you the option of doing.
Yeah.
Like,
I
like that, even though this is a spoiler podcast, we haven't said what that terrible thing is.
Because it's horrible. Like, you're condemning someone to a life of sexual assault. Like, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah. So like, I almost said rape, and then I thought, well, you don't actually know that's going to happen. It just seems awfully likely.
Yeah. I mean, I also, to be honest, from a player perspective, I had a problem with the way that is delivered. That this guy just comes up to you in the party. He knows who you are.
What
you're there for. Like, if he had assumed the same thing everyone else assumes, which is that you're in Corvo cosplay.
Yeah.
Because people, by that point, can recognize the mask and they know what you're...
See, I think maybe because I'd done the missions before that so stealthily, it never occurred to me, like, I don't think there were wanted posters anywhere. No one seemed to suggest that I was Corvo. They just thought the mask was horrible. They called me a sicko.
Yeah, but some people say...
Any reference to an assassin or me being dressed like an assassin.
I think I saw one. Well, there were two wanted posters. There's one for Corvo and one for the masked man.
Yeah.
And it's only when, if you actually sign the guest book, Corvo Itano. Like, I actually did sign the guest book because it said sign the guest book, and I pressed that and I expected to get a list of options rather than just like scrawling my actual name. But then that comes back later.
But it would be interesting if the wanted posters are all for Corvo with his mask off, unless someone has seen you on one of your missions and then they turn into, we want the masked man.
Well, I got both. Like, there's Corvo wanted for the death of the Empress, and then the masked man that's doing these terrible things.
But, like, if you literally have never been seen since you put that mask on, then there shouldn't be any posters for the masked man, should there?
No. No, indeed. That's what I'm going to try and do now with this. It was all a terrible accident playthrough.
I wonder if the situation with me, I think I've maybe been seen, but maybe I hadn't been seen enough to trigger wanted posters for a masked man.
Yeah. But I mean, essentially what happened on the party mission is I cleared out the upstairs and I wanted to get her upstairs, execute her, and then get out through the side door, the upstairs door, and then just out and done. When I went back downstairs, despite the fact that I now had all the information on all the sisters because I'd been in all the rooms, no one would talk to me in the party at all. Like, they wouldn't even respond. They didn't even have, like, a bark they said when they pressed F. It was just not happening. Mm-hmm. So I ended up having to go back downstairs into the party. Still, everyone's on low alert. Like, no one's alerted to anything. The officers are just hanging around. Like, everything's fine. Wait till she was alone, possessed her, walked up the stairs into the upstairs loo, like, shoved her into the loo and then closed the door behind her, and then ran into one of the bedrooms, possessed a rat, went down the vents into the room that controls the Wall of Light at the bottom of the stairs, hacked the Wall of Light, and waited. And then, so obviously she upstairs recovers, does the kind of like, oh, that was weird, walk back to her position in the party, and I just waited and waited and waited and waited and waited and waited and waited, and he had this bzzzt, and then like a fly swatter, like it was like electric fly things, and then the target eliminated came up, and then immediately disconnected the Wall of Light, like so, and killed. Yeah, and it was like that was what gave me the idea to do this. Oh, it's all just a terrible accident playthrough, because that genuinely does. If it wasn't for the unconscious guards upstairs, that looks like a woman just was accidentally incinerated by the stupid electric death gate she installed in the middle of a party.
The big thing I wanted to try in that Lady Boyle mission is that they make a point of telling you that if you use the mechanical harp, or I think one of the notes mentions it, but one of the Lady Boyle sisters, when there's no one else around, plays the harpsichord. And then there's, I think there's a harpsichord in the party or a piano, isn't there? And so I possessed that sister and then walked her over to the piano. Because if you do it with Corvo, then he just goes,
and I wanted to see if I possess her and walk her over and get her to use it, does she actually play something proper? No, it turns out no. But I went to a lot of effort to try to work it and find out.
One of her things says that she'll sleep with any man who's a musician.
Yeah.
And I got her in the room because I thought maybe this is a way of getting
upstairs. Don't play the piano. Don't play the piano.
Maybe this is a way of going upstairs. Like, hello, I'm just like an assassin. Do you want to take me upstairs, please?
There is also, there's a guard that walks over and he goes ba-dum, 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 ba-dum as well, and so I wonder if there is some relevance to that.
I know the feeling, brother.
I have no idea what I'm doing either.
I was trying to work out if there was something you could do with that information, but I don't know.
Well, it's relevant if that turns out to be Lady Boyle, then you can use it to charm her. If you know Lady Boyle is the one who likes music, then you can invite her to the music room, and that's a place where there are no other guests usually.
Okay.
So it's a safe place to go.
That's fair enough. For me, the Lady Boyle target was one of the other ones, so she was completely irrelevant.
I thought, this is one of the problems with the non-lethal option creepy dude is he kind of tells you which one it is straight away.
Yeah.
Like, or he says go and talk to Moth.
He tells you the name, doesn't he? And then the other woman
he tells you to talk to just tells you who it is, and it kind of takes a big chunk of that mission away.
Yeah.
It feels like maybe something true of the game in general is it bends over backwards. I think maybe the designers were ever worried that people would just play it as a straight action game, wouldn't figure out that there were these other
options. Well, they said that specifically about the Lady Boyle mission, is they had to make it more clearly hinted as to what you should do, because they found that when the guards told players they couldn't go upstairs, players just didn't go upstairs. Oh, sorry, I won't go upstairs then. Oh, for fuck's sake, really? It's an infiltration game.
It's easy to forget that gamers will just do what they're told, most of them.
And in some cases, you can't blame them, because, you know, there are games where if the tailor go upstairs and you try and do it, you'll die and then you'll lose all your progress.
Yeah, so it's like the Battlefield 3 non-compliance aneurysm.
Or the game will break. Yeah.
I mean, it's just that thing of, I would that those were a bit better hidden, but it's, I understand that.
Yeah, I don't know if it's to do with the randomization that, because when I played it at the review, I did the same thing. I talked to the Scarecrow Man, and then I talked to, I can't remember her name, but
Miss White,
yeah. And with those two pieces of information, that identified the target, so I never had to go upstairs. And I kind of wanted... I think it's actually... You will get the identity that way, but you don't have any clues that will let you get them on their own. Like, if you've been upstairs, then you know the clues that will... For each one, there's a different trigger for how to get her alone. The music woman goes to the music room. The flirty lady will come upstairs with you. I don't know what the other one is. I don't think I've ever had her.
It's the woman in black. It's paranoia.
Ah.
She's afraid, so if you tell her she's in danger, she will go strange places with you.
Have you found the panic room in there?
No.
I'm told there's a panic room they all go to, but I've never actually set up an alarm where they're still alive, at least not where the target's still alive. And I've found like a secret attic, but it's not that. And apparently it leads to it, but I haven't found it yet.
Okay, I set off an alarm where the target was still alive, but it was on a kind of bugged playthrough. I seem to have encountered quite a few bugs in this game. It's not a particularly buggy game or anything, but
there's a lot you can do to fuck with it, isn't
there? I had this situation where I was sneaking around upstairs and I got spotted by a guard, but I tranked him really quickly, and I thought I'd got away with it. And then I snuck around the rest of the upstairs, avoiding everyone else, got all the information I needed and stole as much as I could. And then when I came to go back downstairs, all the guests are on their knees in that kind of please don't hurt me pose. And as soon as they see me, the overseers come over with their music boxes. And it was bizarre because I didn't know, like, upstairs hadn't heard me tranking this guy, but downstairs had, and everyone. But in that situation, my target was just, she was just crouched there. She hadn't gone to a safe house or anything. She was just sat on the floor.
I've noticed some weirdness with the AI around rats. Like, they'll sometimes go into there's a stalker around here, even if they just want to kill rats. So, like, I once saw these two guys just hair past me. Like, I was sneaking kind of really sort of conspicuously and just ran straight past me. I was like, shit, they found a body, but I don't think I've knocked anyone out. And then just realized they were just attacking rats, like, two streets away. My favorite one, and we'll have a video of this up soon because it's part of a bigger video I'm doing, is I'm doing a video about one very stupid way of playing the game that the AI doesn't know how to respond to. Which is this concept of fair play, that you warn everyone before you kill them, like reverse Dishonored, basically. And you do this by firing a gun in the air to, like, alert people, like, hello, I'm going to kill you now.
Mm-hmm. You should also say yeehaw.
And I did one where I got five guards surrounding me, fighting me, killed two of them with takedowns, teleported a short distance away, killed a third one, and the other two reset to patrolling AI, even though I still stood right in the middle of a pile of corpses. Then one of them found the corpse of the guy he'd just been fighting alongside and seen die, and went, a corpse! At which point I fired my gun between them. Then they didn't, and then they turned, and then looked away and turned back to the corpse. Like, okay, that was clearly a gunshot, but whatever. And then looked at the corpse for a bit, and then turned around again, and then went into, like, first time alarmed for the first time, like, whoa! And then the entire fight resumed after, like, a two-minute interval.
It was really weird.
I was telling you earlier I had that problem in the Golden Cat mission where I chucked out one of the guards downstairs in the kitchen and then heard footsteps and ran and hid, and waitresses come in and just kind of stand on top of the sleeping guard on the ground where she gets stuff off a shelf. And then, so that was strange, but I thought, okay, maybe they don't care. Maybe they, yeah, I don't know. And then I got possessed the lady Boyle I had to kill and was walking her downstairs, and I got just into the door of the kitchen when my possession spell ran out. I got spat out the back of her.
So to speak.
And then I choked her out so she wouldn't, you know, panic. I could carry her. But then again, I heard footsteps, so I ran and hid. And again, waitresses come in, just stepping over Lady Boyle, lying
not
on the ground.
Not paid enough to care about unconscious masters.
But at that point, I thought, okay, this is messed up. I think, like, I'll go back to an old... What I decided to do was, okay, well, they don't seem to care. Do they mind if I now pick her up? And yes, they do.
Is this
and
that okay?
alerted everyone. Okay, so... Went back to an earlier save, but now as soon as that earlier save loaded, everyone freaked out because there were bodies on the floor. Now they cared, which is just like, that's just a weird glitch that's happened somehow, which, you know, lost me 10 or 15 minutes of progress.
Speaking of getting people's attention, at a great moment where I rewired a watchtower, the really tall things that fire missiles at people, and you can blink up to them, and then the rewiring panel and the power are on the same platform. Mm-hmm. And so you're standing on it and you rewire it, and then it starts attacking guards because usually they're surrounded by guards. And so it's a great ride. It's like being on a, you know, a fairground ride or something, because it jerks around and, you know, aims at everyone and blows them all up. And then I got a situation where there's two more guards in the area, but they're just kind of, they were idle, they'd wandered off. They hadn't, they'd kind of got excited about the commotion at first, but they hadn't come near me. Mm. And then they just went back to their patrols. So I was standing on top of the tower, like, firing my gun to try and get their attention, saying, "Woo, look at me!" And then they didn't get attention for that, so I started shooting them, like, in the leg. Can I just, like, get your attention that way? Because even though I could have just killed them with a crossbow, but I wanted them to die via the watchtower.
I found a fun physics bug. On the level, the final part of the plague district with the tall boys in the kind of big floodlit area, mm-hmm. and the plague train that goes back and forth. I'll tell you how I got out of there in a minute, because it's, like, one of my favourite things to do in the game. But, I was trying to get a rune that's on top of a rooftop. And you can climb up a nearby building and blink up, but I didn't know that. So I'd already figured out that you can get on top of the plague train. But if you get on top of the plague train, when it tips over to deposit bodies, it shoots you through the air. Like, like it just goes, and you're fired, like, across the level and, like, into a wall and you die. It's like a catapult. And I used that to get to the rune. Like, in midair, I would, like... slow time, switch to blink, and like, use the power of the plague catapult to get myself. But then getting out of that level, I loved solving it this way because it felt like such a bypass of this entire challenge, like three tall boys and guards and spotlights and everything. Is I got on top of a building, then blinked on top of one of the railings, like the barbed railings. There's one spot you can stand on above the railway track. Stood there, waited for the train to go underneath me, stopped time, jumped, and in midair shot a crossbow bolt, or put a crossbow bolt in the air ready to go at the whale oil canister powering the wall of light on the train tracks, like much further down, mm-hmm. and then landed on the train as time resumed, and then shot out through an explosion while surfing a train.
I don't know why or how, but I was already on the train at that point. Like, I'd come from further back, and I saw the wall of light coming, and I was like, oh, that's Jim, I better get off. And then I saw the battery, and I was, like, about 4 seconds away from hitting the light. I'm like, shit, I'm not quite ready to, like, switch to a weapon and then turn around and then aim at this thing whilst moving and account for the fall off of the dart. And I just jumped off and thought, okay, I'm just going to unplug this safely and wait for the next train. Let's do this a sensible way.
That's why stopping time is useful.
There's a couple...
Do we have to wrap up?
We should wrap up very shortly. In fact, let's do it now, because I can talk about this game all day.
Yeah.
It's, like, we gripe a little bit about it in terms of bugs and the twist and that sort of thing, but it is an extremely good game.
Yeah, it's all the systems stuff that just makes me want to go back to it.
Yeah, we'll all go back and replay it. In fact, Chris is replaying it three different ways. So,
yeah, right now.
Yep.
So, yeah, thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening.
Thanks.
Goodbye.
Cheerio.
Maybe we should have done a better outro to that in terms of we could share this.
We could load a save and do it again.
If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, why not tell a friend? It on Facebook
BBC podcast,
and upvote it on iTunes. Yes. Post it to Friendster and Orkut.
Put it on Dig.
Upload this to MySpace.
Indeed, let's stop making fun of defunct social media and leave.